Transportation Committee to order. Get those tape recorders down on the table. And on behalf of Chairman Alvarado, as the Vice Chair of Budget Appropriations, I will call the Appropriations Committee meeting to order. It's 10 after 10. This morning we have a fair number of things in the item. Mr. Chairman, you want to...
Right, we're meeting jointly this morning to take up, I guess, five items. Let's get right into them. We have a long agenda for these committees today. Let me direct your attention to ID number 4321. It's a resolution, public hearing resolution, and together for discussion. Let's go also to ID 4322, local law, that proposes to amend the lease with Signature Flight Support Corporation for space at Westchester County Airport. We have representatives from the airport with us, as well as Public Works. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. And John, if you could begin, just for the record, let's just state your name and title, please.
John Chu, Commissioner of Public Works Transportation.
Peter.
Peter Sharon, Airport Manager.
Patty.
Okay, so what are we looking at?
We're providing you a handout to be prepared relative to the first two items,
okay.
Signature Support Corporation and the lease amendment. So people work off of that list. We'll explain.
Okay. Well, thank you. Basically, what we have is we have a hangar that's the center point of it. It's called Hangar C1. Mm-hmm. Hangar C1 was built in the 1960s.
Behind your package is actually a map of all the locations, so you have a bearing list of what you're looking at.
Sure.
And the hangar right now has not been used as a hangar probably for the last 7 years.
Really?
Yeah, the hangar itself is actually landlocked from the Signature ramp in the sense that, number one, it used to be smaller airplanes. It used to be light, a lot of light general aviation airplanes that were in that location. And after the events of 9/11, they actually had to reconfigure some of their ramp area, which actually created a landlock of Hangar C1. So what happens was they couldn't get any airplanes in there. They couldn't pass through the little neck area that goes into the location. And they were unable to use the hangar, so basically all they used it was for storage of some fuel trucks and certain types of equipment. So with the... With all the vehicles that we have on the terminal ramp, we've gone from about 50 vehicles to service the airplane to 103 vehicles that we have to service. And we've also gone to from 125 employees before 9/11, we've gone to about 225 employees that we have to handle. With that, we're very constrained on the ramp. So with that, we asked Signature if they'd be willing to give up the hangar so we could turn the hangar into a ground service equipment storage facility. That way we can actually store our equipment in there and we can actually develop our bail program, which is our electric vehicles. Right now we have to keep two types of vehicles. We have to keep gasoline-driven vehicles. We have to keep electric vehicles simultaneously because electric vehicles don't charge in the wintertime below 32 degrees. They're designed to be inside a facility in order to charge properly. So what happens is we have to put more bolos of equipment during the wintertime, and we have to bring out our gasoline-driven vehicles and service them. It's a very high expense because I have to maintain two types of equipment. Also, I have no place to park them. Right now, our vehicles that are our gasoline-driven vehicles are parked out in basically pasture areas. Also, our de-icing vehicles are parked in remote areas of the airport. And that also creates a very big expense for us in the sense of that it costs more maintenance. When you leave stuff outside, it deteriorates a lot quicker. The other side of it is, if you look at the financial side, we're also taking Hangar A, which is a lean-to on Hangar A, which is a North Office facility. That gives us some savings in the sense that when we put our de-icing tanks in there, Signature could not rent these offices. The tanks are physically up against these office areas, and it was very difficult for them to rent it. We can rent it because we're going to actually turn that facility into more of the storage area and our access to the terminal ramp area. So this way these offices will be utilized by our ground service people, our administration people for ground handling, and also our de-icing vendor, and also our ramp supervisors. So that way we have a little bit of savings in there that we're renting it from Signature now, but we were able to take it over and have some cost savings. When you look at the numbers here, we would lose $379,000 in rentable space. A large area, we've actually made up that rent area by actually putting in parking fees for the airlines and also for basically increased towing fees to the airlines. So basically all the expense is not driven on our tenant side, our corporate side, but it actually generated from our commercial side, which is important, that we're not putting the onus on our corporate tenants. So you can see there's about $163,000 in excess rent that we're collecting that will be utilized to operate the facilities, also make modifications and improvements to the facility. The other thing that when we take over this hangar, the hangar itself, we're going to take down the office area. The office area is single pane windows, very energy inefficient. And what we're going to do is we're going to close off the main hangar doorway. We're going to put up a solar wall to get more energy efficient use of the facility, and we're going to upgrade the facility. The steel structure on the hangar itself is in very good shape. We're going to reutilize a lot of that facility, and we're going to put new siding on it, and we're going to look for type of ambient lighting system by putting in light bays over the things so we don't use as much light. So we're looking to, number one, make it a more of a green technology, also give us a facility that services our electric vehicles and also provides us storage. We have very limited storage on the terminal ramp with all the other efforts we're doing in the larger type of airplanes. So, again, this is our request. There are some, I put a handout together that kind of explains a little bit in further detail as to what we're going to be doing. And we'll take any questions you have from
Peter.
Thank you, both chairs. Wearing my budget appropriations hat, could you take us through this sheet here, the loss, the savings, the net,
sure,
how it nets out?
All right, the first one on there when it talks about rental revenue lost, hangar C1 kind of gives an idea that hangar itself is comprised of a hangar itself, and it has an office area, and that's the loss in annual loss in rent that we would be giving up as a lease modification. Hangar A only calls for the office area on the north side of the hangar. And that's so the rental we lose from that. And then we're taking those 62 vehicle parking spaces that when I was here last time with the committee, I mentioned about 62 spaces we were going to take over and put employees in.
It's the drinks.
So the total loss is $379,000 in lost rental every single year. So as part of that, some of the rental savings, we're talking about GHA offices where right now we rent office space from Signature in a different hangar to actually handle some of the people, the administrative work that we have that we just don't have room in the terminal for. Also, the Contigo, which is our aircraft de-icing vendor, he has to rent space there in order to muster up his training offices and also to handle all his paperwork. We rent that from Signature directly also. And a GHI supervisor's trailer, we had to rent a trailer because we have no room in the terminal. We would be able to get rid of that rental trailer. We'd be able to forego that. Now, as for new revenue, what we did was we put in aircraft parking fees. And in 2010, we put that in early. So 2010, we actually collected the $333,000. Yeah, we actually collected that. That's an actual number of what we collected in 2010. That is a new revenue source. Also, increased towing fees. We actually increased the towing fees to the aircraft, which accounts for, and again, we put that in place October 1st of this past year. So we have a total net revenue. We also have the rental savings. We have the lost revenue of $379,000, and we come up with about a surplus of about $168,000.
When the Signature amendment was being proposed last year, one of the things that I said to Pete was, how are you making up the lost revenue? Because clearly we don't want our airport fund to depreciate in terms of the value. Mm-hmm. And so Pete instituted some of these charges, which were not invasive nor arbitrary, which from what he did when it compared to other airports was similar charges that we had not implemented ourselves. And he put that into place. And as you know, most of the stuff has been in place since fall. And it's worked very well. No one's complaining. We're providing level of service. The other thing is that, right now he's basically maintaining two types of vehicles. He's maintaining the gas-powered vehicles for the winter and the electric cars for all the other periods. So basically he's maintaining two sets of vehicles. Our goal here is to put all the electric vehicles inside this building, have all the charging stations, so that we can use electric at the airport year-round basis. at which point we will begin to auction off our gasoline-powered vehicles. So it's a win-win in terms of the carbon footprint issue. It's a win-win in terms of the fact that Signature's been landlocked by this hangar for a long time. So therefore, they've been dying to get out of it. We approached them. Clearly, we wouldn't have come to this amendment if Signature was in opposition of us taking over the space. They're receptive. We approached them first. So it's a win-win for everybody. They give us space that we need, that they don't really need. They keep their landlocked. We get to convert it into a more of a green concept. We get to replace the duplicate vehicles going down the road. And we have a better operation on the tarmac. We can take more of these vehicles and store them off the tarmac so that on the air side, we don't have all these vehicles all over the place.
Other questions?
Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Looking at the chairman of the energy and when it was energy environment, from the electrical vehicle perspective, mm-hmm. in the hangar space, are we going to do solar panel installations with the charging stations?
Yes.
I know that there's a presentation.
Yes, we're going to take a solar wall mm-hmm. and make it even greener. As you know, the airport's ISO 14001 compliance, mm-hmm. we just got ordered last year, so clearly we'll fall on the trend line of being even more green as it becomes possible.
On that point, committee members, obviously you all understand that while we certainly watch the dollars spent at the airport, they're not general fund dollars when the airport has its own fund, and so the airport has always been a good place, if not to experiment, but at least model energy efficiency, green, where it might cost a little bit more, but the long life cycle actually save money, but we can do things at the airport as sort of a governmental work to see what happens. We put some LED lights in. So just to the chairman's point, without as going through the details, it is an opportunity when you do something like this to go to the J.P. Morgan Chase model of, platinum lead. I mean, whatever makes sense, economically, because of the, life cycle cost, but it's an opportunity to do things there to show what can be done. So to the chairman's point, hopefully you take that mission and incorporate it in everything you do. Mr. Burke.
Is there any issue that Signature feels in some way put upon here, or are we relieving them of a burden without any real problem?
They have a burden. Again, it's hangars where they make money. And they lost the hangar, but they're paying hangar rental to us. So it was a cost burden to them. They couldn't generate any money from that hangar being a hangar. So but they signed a 30-year agreement saying that they're going to pay us a rent for that hangar, but yet they can't use it because it's landlocked.
Other people sued under those circumstances, though.
They didn't say okay.
They have.
They're very happy.
Okay, so we're just relieving them of a burden.
Yes.
And there's no other issue. There's no residual resentment or hostility or something that's going to be trouble down the road.
Very happy.
Right. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, if I may take 2 minutes. Mr. Nolan is not, as the person who essentially represented the airports over the years, if this was 2003, I might be taking a different view of this. The public doesn't necessarily, this information is obviously public. My constituents may or may not be fully familiar with what's going on, but if this was 2003 and this was presented to us, there might be some different issues. And let me, in 1995, the airport, it was done, and I wasn't here, but if I recall, or maybe it was 98, because Mr. Spano had just come into office, and there was a proposal for a 900-square-foot business lounge on the second floor.
Executive lounge
on the second floor. And the new county executive killed it under the heading it was to be expansion. So that's where we were in the 90s. Even up to 2003, but to the committee members, because from my perspective, in 2004, this board codified the restrictions. Those restrictions were voluntarily. It was always my concern, and obviously County Executive Spano's at the time, that it was voluntary, and depending on what happened, we didn't have that protection. The committee report talks about passengers utilizing the terminal have more than doubled in the past 4 years. That was exactly my concern in 1991, when, frankly, we had defeated the terminal and we made the passenger space in the footprint 20% smaller. My concern of others, was this was potentially going to become an airport where families could fly to Florida and go out and use that as sort of a nice place to leave from. And some of us didn't want that to happen. It was a business airport and we wanted to keep it that way. And so we did what we did back in the early 90s. But in 2004, because we codified those restrictions, my discussions with my constituents were, listen, we have those protections. They're in the law. And when JetBlue came in and AirTrans came in, in fact, the passengers have doubled, and we have what we have. This will lead eventually, one of the things not latest here, but 1,000 square foot addition to the departure lounge. Let me put the most important issue, and we go to the new change. If I'm correct, we're doing some of this work today to be prepared to, in fact, enlarge the departure lounge by 1,000 square feet and some of the other projects coming along. Again, in the old days, that could potentially raise a lot of red flags and expand to whatever you want to say. What I'm saying on the record to you and people watching at home, for the legislator who's watched this as carefully as anybody, I am satisfied that, again, the codification of those restrictions is key. And the reality is, so now with that in place, the reality is we have brought JetBlue and AirTrans in. Passengers have doubled. In fact, it's led to fewer flights, because in many of those half-hour slots now, the restrictions is not just four flights per half hour, but 240 passengers. And they're hitting the passenger cap with three flights. So it's a little counterintuitive, but with more business, fewer flights. So overall, that's the reality. So the administration is here. You know, we need to make these changes. Most of it is for safety, for the de-icing, which obviously is critical. So most of the changes are actually quite important, quite necessary, to the extent it flows over into some passenger, and I'm hearing some of it from my constituents, passenger comfort and ease of operation. I'm just prepared to put on the record that given the codification of the restrictions, I think we can do this. I don't consider it expansion. We're working within our footprint of what we have, but we do have these passengers here. They're here. And with the restrictions, I think I'm comfortable in making the facility a little more comfortable and usable for our people. So having said that, Mr. Chairman, I just felt it was important to put that on the record from my perspective. I'll entertain any other questions anybody else has on. I notice our chairman of Budget Appropriations here, so I will leave the field at this point. We'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you for getting things started over here again. Any other comments or concerns?
Just a quick question. Yeah. What is the time frame on completion on that?
We'd like the lease modification. We have it in there for starting May 1st, 2011, and that's what we'd like to stick to. And from that point, we would sit down with the signature, and we would start making the transition.
So move for budget.
Second.
Okay, move and second.
And entertain a motion for Public Works.
So moved.
Motion and second. Any final discussion?
Makes sense.
All in favor for both
aye.
Committees?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, these items then are reported.
So that's items 1 and 2?
1 and 2.
Items 1 and 2 are all in purpose. Right. Public hearing and the local law.
Right. Okay, very good. Thank you.
But this has to have a public hearing.
That's right. The terminal system upgrade. The committee members will recall that we had this this general the subject matter before us before, but today we're back and we're looking at a different method of financing.
Right. The board had previously requested that we consider cashing out using cash up in terms of the airport reserve fund. By the end of December, we're up to $29 million with the $4 million previously to the upgrade. Since the initial $5 million for the terminal would bring the reserves to $20 million, which I know we've been working with the Legislative Williams Committee relative to what that right number should be in terms of what the number should be. So the administration is in agreement with the fact that we will cash out this $5 million, and the legislation has been modified to reflect the fact that we will utilize the airport reserve fund.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
Just for clarification of the agenda, members, this is one of the items that's going to be received on file at the end, just because it was changed. So moved by Mr. Jenkins, second by Mr. Jenkins for budget and appropriation. For both committees.
I can't second for public works.
Second for public works, Mrs. Williams. Is there any final discussion on the terminal system upgrade?
Mr. Chairman, I just want to note that it was great work between the board and the administration in making these modifications. I know Commissioner Hsu was with the administration in hearing our request. I know Ms. Delgado's here and worked hard in trying to get this done, and we appreciate the consideration and the speed as which it was done. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, the $5 million, this is closing the observation deck.
Building a new observation.
Framing,
deck.
Roofing, but this is not a part of the departure lounge.
That's correct.
Right, this is just basically moving the observation deck and enclosing, building a new one. Is that correct? For this particular one.
Right, yes. And then when we actually build a new observation deck, we'll move the people to the departure lounge upstairs, right. And that'll, in essence, create.
And then that will open that
back.
Okay. Okay, sir. All right, those are all the items you have.
I don't think we voted on it.
Yeah.
We
didn't vote.
We didn't vote.
We took
motion.
I think I called for final discussion.
Yeah. You have a move in second.
All right.
You want to take it?
Hearing no other discussion, then, for both committees, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And this item is now moved to the floor.
Yeah, if I may, in the interest of some members that we may lose, Chairman Ryan, I would like to move to discuss the last three items on the budget agenda. This is the Lower Shelf Project.
You want to share? No, I think you just want to file it, right? Jose.
Jose, we've got one more with Chairman Ryan, which is Mountain Lakes.
Okay.
And then,
I was doing this.
Yeah, and then if we could do Wildwood right after
Wildwood.
That. Thank you.
Numbers 8
okay.
And 9.
Okay.
We have 4389. It's a bond act, proposed bond act to repair the pool at Mountain Lakes Park. $400,000. To finance this capital project. And who was here to speak to us today from, parks and budget?
I can address that, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Thank you.
How are you going to direct the conversation at this point?
If you recall, a few weeks ago, your good committee took this matter up. There was an engineering study done in 2009 detailing the disrepair that the pool had fallen into. Particularly the mechanical systems. This pool is also used by the town of North Salem to run a camp, which is open to all county residents. It's not just North Salem residents, but this is a county pool. The town of North Salem is spending thousands and thousands of dollars a year patching this, replacing water, based on the discussion in your good committee, we decided to move this forward, especially in view of the light of the county is now spending an equal amount to repair electrical work within the park. We figured this would be a good time to move this forward. Your committee minutes and your committee data has the detailed engineering study that we went over. So this has been in the works since 2009.
All right. Is there any discussion on this proposed bond act? I mean, as Mr. Harkin has said, we have gone over this territory before. Mary Jane.
It seems as if it's a pool in an area that, in many ways, is underserved and. I think there does seem to be good demand for it, and it does really good work in the community. And when you consider the size of some of the capital repairs we have to do, $400,000 seems to be a small price to pay for the amount of good it will do in that part of the county.
So move, Mr. Chair.
Okay, move by Mr. Harkin.
For budget.
Second by Mr. Burton.
Entertain a motion for parks.
Second.
Motion is second. Any final discussion on this proposed bond act? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, this item then is reported to the board.
Mr. Ryan, we have one more item. Pete, you have a little bit of time. All right, Pete,
yeah, I'm good till 11:30.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Should we move to the framework discussion, or should we do just because? Well, to what time do I have you?
11:30.
All right. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So let's do item five on the budget agenda. This is an item that memorandum of legislation, proposed bond act, capital project RSP-02. And this is not a new item. This is a Spring Ridge pool for $8.8 million. I understand there's some documentation that we are anticipating. And Lo is here.
Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, to introduce yourself and company, we appreciate
James it. James M. Robinson, Assistant Chief Deputy County Attorney in charge of the contracts and real estate bureau.
Jeff Golden, Assistant County Attorney.
Welcome.
Kathy O'Connor, Commissioner of Parks and Recreation.
And David DeLucia, the Director of Park Facilities. Good morning.
Anybody?
Good morning to all of you. Well, as the committee members can see, we have in front of us, this is a memorandum in support of legislation. We have had several discussions on the Spring Ridge pool modernization, the need for capital work there, and. Let me just put on the record that, and we can ask at the same time, I know that a few weeks ago I made a request for certain information to be provided to the Public Works, Parks, Labor, and Transportation Committee. And as of this morning, I don't know whether or not we have everything on that list. Olivia, I turn to you at this point. Okay. So we don't have all the information that we need, but the item is on this morning, so why don't we do a couple of things. One, how about a general discussion about an update as to where things stand with respect to this capital project that the board would like to see county government move forward with. And secondly, can we focus on the outstanding items that this legislature would need to have in hand in order to move forward with the work that we have to do on our end. So I guess with that said, Kathy, let me turn to you and just ask, can we start with an update? Or Jim?
He's pointing to me.
we'll just keep pointing around the room.
I think what we should do is remember that I'm acting as your lawyer at this point because the request came to us through the chair of the board on February 23rd. Your initial information that was given to us is that memorandum that was prepared by Chairman Jenkins. That was the initial information and the only information that we had at the time. Mr. Goldman here forwarded that information to both bond counsel and to the planning department, the necessary bond preparation and the seeker. Mm-hmm. We did not have the normal, the normal capital process is you get a capital project fact sheet, which is signed off by all the departments. And that's usually what generates that. We get that request from budget, we got the capital project fact sheet, then we go to bond council, and that would also be forwarded to planning by budget for the preparation of the seeker. That was the missing piece. As I recall, the last time you were here, you were presented by Kathy with a 2009 capital project fact sheet. I believe there have been discussions, which your honorable board would know better than I, on updating that fact sheet because we were not involved in those communications. Mr. Bass was. I've seen some of the emails. Mm-hmm. On Friday, approximately somewhere between 4:15 and 4:30, Mr. Bass suddenly arrived at our doorstep. I was going to a meeting, and he was walking in the front door and presented us with an incomplete capital project fact sheet dated 5/26/11. It's not signed. However, it did have important information that we didn't have from the original memorandum, legislative memorandum, it gave us the total financing history going back to 2006, where there was Bond Act 40-06 and Bond Act 188-06. And so since we had new information, which was relevant to the Bond Act, Mr. Goldman, upon receipt of this, and at the request of Mr. Bass, forwarded this information to Bond Council because we would need to adjust the Bond Act to reflect the prior financing. You'd want to adjust the PPU and the Design Bond Act that had not yet been sold. That was Bond Act 188-06. So you get longer-term savings out of that.
Now, this is the document that the two committees are looking at now that's on the back. I guess it's been reproduced on the back of this memorandum of legislation.
Yeah, and I'm looking at, and the additional information that we didn't have, obviously, was the financing history.
Now, you had mentioned the copy I have is in fact unsigned. That so this would be completed by who, in order for.
Well, it would be delivered.
The unsigned version would be
right.
Around
it would be
today.
Delivered to us by budget in the normal course of events. If something was coming through the administration, it would be signed by the budget department, the Department of Planning, Department of Public Works, and Requesting Department.
Okay, so the lack of signature indicates what? It's just information provided to accommodate the board, and in light of the fact that the board wants to move forward with this, it's not coming from the administration down.
It would
down.
Indicate to me that the departments that would normally review and sign off on it have not done so.
Haven't done so. Okay. All right.
But again, Mr. Bass had the specific conversations with the budget department, and I would defer to him.
Okay. So at this point, we do have some information that we hadn't seen before. We had been looking at a two-year-old capital budget fact sheet up until now. All right. So we have this in hand. What else?
What else
are we waiting for?
Mr. Chairman, if I can, you know the wishes of this legislation. We're moving forward. This is a project that was back and in the rolls to be executed. What's it going to take to get it done? To all of you.
I can answer that. The administration does not want to go forward with this project.
All right.
I don't know what else to say, but that's what they're saying.
And has the administration, is there a response from the administration as to why they don't want to do this?
Well, I've supplied a number of reasons each time I've spoken at this honorable board, because of the cost of the bond, we've talked about the fact that we have other pools are on bus routes, there's no bus route to Strand Ridge. The Strand Ridge pool had the lowest attendance out of all the pools that we've had in the past. We're in the process of finishing Tibbetts. We don't run in full capacity Monday through Friday. When it's perfect weather Saturday and Sunday, then we do. But I don't have it right in front of me, but we had numerous reasons why the project was not going forward. But as I said, the administration at this point does not
want
to go forward.
Yes, Ms.
President. Kathy, just one answer. I have Tibbetts. I am very grateful for it. I like it. I have Mount Vernon. I'm very grateful for it, and I like it. I also have a lot of my people who are constantly calling me, okay, about Spring Brook. People that are... feel that the camps are going to be really destroyed. There won't be enough room in Tibbetts and the other places to handle, because it's closed. People are, they're on the phone all the time, and it's not my district, okay, but it is in the city of Yonkers. I do care about parks, and, I'm interested. It's closed this year, we understand it, but is there anything that you see or anybody sitting up there sees in the future that we will take care of this pool? It has to be fixed.
To be honest with you, I think they have to see how the summer goes and see what happens. Nothing is ever absolute black and white, and as we go forward, we'll see. But as far as the day camps, and of course that's been a big concern, our department has worked real hard. We've reached out to every single day camp that attended Strand Ridge Pool, and they've been reassigned. Most of them are going to Saxon Woods. We're really well adjusted with that because we're aware of the fact that that's a problem.
Okay.
So we're working with Wilson's Woods. Camps will be going there. We're going, a couple are going to Tibbetts. Most of them are going to Saxon Woods. We offered up Playland Pool. No one had jumped on that one yet, but we're hoping that maybe between now and when we open it on the 24th, they will.
The discussions that have taken place then between the administration that doesn't want to do this and parks that plays an integral part in operating, you know, obviously the pool, is at, if the administration doesn't want to go forward with a project to fix the pool, what has been suggested, that the pool just be, I don't know, decommissioned and broken down or... Well, some other use be put to that land, or?
Oh, sure. Well, just please make sure you will understand the park is open and well utilized. It's one of our best mountain bike trail areas. Picnic areas have been, we're in the process of rehabilitating the picnic areas. If you go in there, the parking lot is packed. Every weekend, there's hundreds and hundreds of people utilizing the facility. Obviously, the pool is not there. We wouldn't do anything, Bill, for the first season. Obviously, let's see how it goes, see what happens. But it would never, it's not, if the feeling, if this scenario is that it's not ever going to be reopened, it will not remain like that. We don't keep a pool empty. It would be filled in or utilized or reconstructed for something else, make it another.
Oh, no, I wouldn't think that you would. My question was, has it been discussed at this point? We have, obviously, the park is used. Mm-hmm. I got to figure that if there was a pool there with beautiful cool water in it during the summer season, all the other things in the park that are being used, I would imagine the pool would be used as well. The pool, however, is not able to be open this season. The board has a project that it would like to move forward with to open the pool, to make this pool available to all the thousands that go to Spring Ridge Park. But the administration, at least as of today, these two committees are hearing that the administration is not interested in opening up that pool. My comment was, so in these discussions, has there been any indication that what they would ultimately like to do is just keep it closed, ultimately dismantle it, put the property to some other use? Mm-hmm. I mean, to sit around and wait and see, I don't know, I could probably tell them now what they're going to see. They're going to see a park that is going to be utilized this season. And there's not going to be any swimming there. That's what you're, you know, waiting and seeing is going to do. I also wasn't under the impression that we had a surplus of swimming facilities in this county. I seem to hear the exact opposite. But
good morning. Possibly what I don't see here. I've heard the discussion, but in the world of seeker and alternatives, I mean, I'm hearing $8.8 million and let's do nothing. I mean, I'm not an expert in this area, but is there a $2 million swimming complex? Is there a $5 million swimming complex? You said it wasn't the best used when this pool was open. We have Tibbetts, we have Wilson Woods, but conceivably, whether it's the same type of Wilson Woods project at a smaller scale or just different kinds of pools, but to Bill's point, you know, you can sit and wait to... The political winds change, I don't know, but possibly something that parks or some master plan or some independent parks people, what are the swimming alternatives? If you would, the rest of the park is there being used, so to the extent some folks feel that swimming should be a piece of the puzzle, I would be curious or be interested in seeing, there's got to be alternatives to the $8.8 million. Maybe one is $12 million, but maybe one is $2.5 million. Have you or will you consider just an alternative swimming complex?
Awesome. Before David answers for me, I also just wanted to make mention of the fact that, as we've said many, many times here, and you've read it, and you've heard it, and you've seen it, at Wilson's Woods and now at Tibbetts, last year was the first year at Tibbetts, we went from a few thousand people a year to 85,000 people in Tibbetsburg Park. And I was just there yesterday, the slide, I don't know if you've been watching, Chairman Speckman, but the slides are done. The pool is not finished yet, almost done. On target for June 24th, and we're expecting, you know, a tremendous turnout. And I'm out all the time. David is out all the time. We're all out all the time. And the constant repetition is that they love it. they're so excited. They go from pool to pool sometimes if they want a different thing, but the numbers just zoomed, and the same thing happened with Wilson's Woods. So the attendance goes way up when we do what we do, but we're very excited about Tibbetts, and that will be finished. But David can address the capital project that's made.
Well, to answer your specific question, we did look at a number of different alternates. When we were originally designing the pool a few years ago, what we really wanted there was going to cost $15 million. And so we scaled it back to a reasonable size and scale of what we thought we could afford at that time. And the pool itself has failed. It leaks tremendously. The filter system shot. It's not in the repairable mode. It doesn't really. There's nothing to repair any longer, and that's why the capital project was included. However, rethinking it in the current economic climate we're in, the administration decided not to move forward on the expense of the project. We did look at alternatives. If we don't do the pool, what would we use the land for? To answer Mr. Ryan's question, we looked at a number of different things. Group picnic areas are extremely popular in this area, but we haven't made any decision on any of them. But we have looked at a number of different alternates for that particular site. But right now, we're not able to move forward on that.
Okay, Dave, I know in the discussion there's been. There's been a focus on some of the newer aquatic facilities that the trend. I know we were successful at Tibbetts, for example, Wilson Woods with these things. It really spikes the attendance at these pools, and it spikes the potential for revenue for the county or any municipality, for that matter, that operates these types of facilities. The success that we've seen at Wilson Woods and Tibbetts, one would think that something new that either complements a traditional pool, like for competition purposes, something of the aquatic, the water features that complement that we've had good success with now, something like that at Sprain had the potential to attract a lot of customers and a lot of revenue as well. And I'm curious, you mentioned that going back a few years, the original plan was a $15 million facility. What was driving that? What was the department's expectation that in terms of things that the potential that was out there that would even cause you to sit down with at the planning table and think about a $15 million project? Is there that kind of demand out there?
At the time during our master plan process, we looked at all the different pools and how they related to each other and the services that they provide.
Mm-hmm.
When we made a decision about Sprain, it's four miles away from Tibbetts. It was the most underutilized facility. It is in the worst shape of any of the pools moving forward. And in light of the financial decisions and the economic situation we're in, we decided to not move forward. It's not a function of the facility or the use. It's a decision that's made.
Yeah, so it's condition and the fact that it was continuing to tumble in this state of disrepair. It wasn't generating that kind of volume. So it's conceivable to say, I mean, who knows, but a new aquatic facility there, new water features there, might be tremendously successful and could draw a decent crowd. The other thing that I ran into from a person calling me from the local paper the other day, I had to remind them that the $8 million price tag, that we don't incur that in 1 year. Everybody understands that. This slow climbing out of the recession, I was asked, is that a wise thing to do, to spend $8 million this year on a pool? And the point that we have to make is that we're not laying out $8 million all at once. There's a cost to the pool. We bond that cost, and there's debt service. So there is an expense, but it's much lower expense. I think it's easier to get your arms around the fact that it's a facility that we're providing for our residents, and the cost, obviously, we would be viewing it as reasonable should this board decide to approve that kind of financing. Mr. Rogowska.
Well, you sort of touched on a lot of it. I think at the end of the day, we are where we are this summer. It's nothing's going to happen. I have to believe this is sort of marketing the point that you did this master plan. Tibbetts is 4 miles away. Okay, so Tibbetts could be operating this summer, and it's going to do what it's going to do. To move the ball forward, it seems to me that I would want to see some independent organization that works in this field to say, all right, given the population, given Tibbetts, given this, that if you build, if we build X amount at Sprain, this is what you can anticipate. So I heard early on, it's the most underused, it's not this. Well, that's all history. The point is, with a $6, $8, $10 million project design, what would happen in 2013 and 2014? And I would want it, if that group comes back and says, you know, Tibbetts is open and operating and, you know, folks are going there. I mean, when Pizza Hut wants to open a new store, they do a market research of locations, and they're pretty good. They make some mistakes, pretty good of knowing who's, they're not going to, you know, compete from the next closest Pizza Hut, and they do that. Sir, that's what we need. Tibbetts is going to do what it's going to do. My position would be, if there's a market, because we're talking about parks and recreation, we're talking about our constituents. Dollars are important. It's bonded. You look at the annual cost. And if we build, and if the 85,000 or 100,000 it's shown would come to Sprain, then I think that you have to balance that with the dollars, and that works. If the analysis says, no, they're all going to Tibbetts, and they spend $8 million, yeah, it might be a mistake. Well, all right, then that's good to know, too. But I think that's an analysis that just needs to be done at the appropriate time.
All right. I think if I may,
you have a question, Mary Jane?
Yeah, Mary Jane, and this actually exists in your district, this pool, doesn't it?
The entrance to the park is in the district.
Because it does border and serves the Greenberg community.
Yes.
Along with the northern, eastern end of Yonk.
And I am beginning to hear it from my constituents that they're very concerned about the continued existence of this pool. This project was voted on and approved for the 2010 budget, I believe. So this has been around a long time. The plans had already been in place, and things got delayed, and finally we hear the full truth this morning. As I said, there is lots of demand for this pool. There's constituent concern about this pool, and I think that we should find a way to move forward with it. I mean, saying that there's another pool 4 miles away, 4 miles in the context of an area with population as dense as it is, with the road network being such as it is, that's a fairly large distance. We have pools in Greenberg that are maybe a mile, mile and a half apart, and they've got plenty of business. So 4 miles actually tends to support the case that we may very well need the pool here. And the decision had been made for the 2010 budget that the pool was, in fact, needed here. And based on what Legislator Spreckman is hearing, based on what I'm hearing, nothing has changed about that.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I know in the central part of the county, I can rattle up. You got White Plains, you've got Harrison, you've got Northcastle, you got Newcastle, you got Mount Pleasant. You have a number of municipal pools, a number of private clubs that are all providing swimming opportunities to an area that is much less populated, and that still is not enough. And so you know, we're talking here today. We're talking to our professionals in the Parks Department. They certainly know what they're capable of doing. They know what these facilities could be if the government was behind these projects. They know full well how to get this done. Mr. Rogowski raises a good point about a study. But none of that is going to happen. They can't operate as independent agents here. None of that is going to happen unless the administration is supportive of going down that road. So I think that we have run into a situation once again where the board and the administration, over the issue of providing a swimming facility in a rather densely populated part of Westchester, another facility, is something that's generating some sparks. So I don't know whether there's anything else.
No. I want to thank the four of you for coming here today, and I don't want you to feel that your time is wasted. From the legal department, you mentioned you're here representing this board. You may have to strongly represent this board if the wishes of the majority of this board are to move forward with this. It's nothing new with this administration, and it may be that a majority of this board, a supermajority of this board, wants this project to move forward. And we're just hoping for full cooperation from everybody if that is what we're determined to do. Yes.
I just have one question on the memorandum of legislation. Under financial impact, there's sort of an incomplete sentence, and I wondered what it's supposed to say. It says that the financial impact on the operating budget, I guess that means, is the debt service associated with the issuance of bonds. Then it says the increased revenue generated from this county facility, period. And I wondered what that meant.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Is there revenue that we would be, obviously?
Of course. As a matter of fact,
Because
it's easy. And just like what we're doing with Playland and the zero fee to local resident people, anecdotes from the district. Frame Ridge, I couldn't even pronounce it when I had just arrived to this country, was the place to be. And we did some refurbishing in there, and it became, again, with the little umbrellas and stuff like that. It was beautiful. And because you couldn't get there by bus, it was the place where you caught a ride, and you were in that delight facility in Yonkers. So there's no doubt in my mind, once we make this investment, Frame Ridge would become the luxury place to go. So that's with that saying.
I'd like to call the Public Safety Committee to order. We have one item, but just with this, I mean, Kenny's memo, what he's saying is that needs to be part of the analysis, just his memo pointing out that we'll need to get that information.
Okay.
That's just information that's needed. Just his memo of the legislation.
Got it.
Do we have all the information required to prepare the legislation?
What is still outstanding? Can we get that for the record?
Initially, no. And Chairman Ryan, I was sort of cut over my comments because you went into the discussion with Kathy, but you had asked specifically what we're missing.
Right.
The indication of the signatures means that there's been a technical review of the capital project, a recent technical review by all the required departments. That's how the capital process works.
Mm-hmm.
That means there hasn't been anything since the 2009 review. So to the extent
that I had to interrupt. Give us what you need in writing.
Give us what we need.
Yeah, what we need in writing so that we can move forward with this project.
Well,
if we were to move forward.
It's simple. You need the three departments to sign off on the capital project fact sheet to verify that it's accurate. You need a seeker review, which we requested.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Fizz.
And the fizz. The fizz.
Okay, we need a financial impact statement. We need three departments signing off on a capital project fact sheet. And we need
seeker.
And the seeker.
Okay. Seeker, yeah.
Three items, and we need the will of the Board of Legislators to come up with a majority to make this legislature's position clear after a review of all that documentation, after that comes up.
Actually, I have one more question, Bill. Do you have figures? I know for legal reasons you need a figure as to how many people can be in a particular pool area at a particular time. Do you have any research on something broader in terms of how large a population you could expect a particular pool to serve? Because it would be interesting to see what your capacity figures are for the different pools around the county.
Sure, we have.
Yeah, okay, that would be great.
Pizza Hut study.
All right. We want the Pizza Hut study.
I'd like to call the Committee on Public Safety and Security to order to have a 129 budget. Let's do it, but we're in session.
Yeah, you're in session. But we need to direct the departments to do this first, Mr. Chairman, and this direction needs to come from the
All right, we'll discuss this. At this point, I entertain a motion to recess Public Works, Parks, Labor, and Transportation.
Second.
We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
All right.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, this meeting is now adjourned.
Okay. Thanks so much.
All right, item six, I guess, on the budgets, budgets agenda. Is this IMA for latent print and firearms analysis in Nassau County and for public safety? It's the only item. Well, it's one item on our agenda.
And Mr. Chairman, I know we have a lot of busy people here. We're trying to accommodate everybody, but it's not. We're all.